It is primetime action here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Parles. He is Adam Candy. Ben Wilson is here as well. We're at the nightly seventh inning stretch, Adam Candy and I, and there is a game that is approaching the seventh inning stretch right now in Cleveland, the quickest moving game of the night. Nelson Cruz, a homer for the Tampa Bay Rays. Adam Candy, they lead 4-3.
Big start for Nelson Cruz coming over from Minnesota, as he has the difference maker here at the moment. Three-run home run for Jose Ramirez is the sum total of the offense for Cleveland, as this game has some sneaky little wild card implications. Actually, the series does, between the Rays and the Indians. We are kind of skirting around that 9.5 if you had the over. This looked early like it was going to get there and has slowed down quite a bit.
Yeah, the Randy, as you mentioned, the Little League homer for Randy Arozarena. Jose Ramirez committed two errors on that Little League home run, and then, of course, hit that three-run homer that I'm not sure has landed yet in Cleveland. But the Rays, minus 125, again today, leading as they play in the top of the seventh. At Fenway, Garrett Cole's been great, and the Yankees, the one run is held up. 1-0 as they play in the top of the fifth inning. But the Boston bullpen, who was pressed into service quickly in this game, Eduardo Rodriguez leaving in the second inning with a migraine, got out of the big jam in the second inning, and the bullpen has not given up any runs since.
I could pick any number of metrics to tell you about where the Yankees offense is this year, but the simplest one of all is batting average. They have the worst batting average in Major League Baseball. They're under 240, and it shows in a situation like this where a guy comes up from Worcester AAA and is shutting them down the way that Phillips Valdez is for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, now Rios is now in the game for the Boston Red Sox.
Yaxel.
Yeah, Yaxel, yes. 1-0 in favor of the Yankees in the top of the fifth. In Flushing, the Mets leading the Blue Jays 2-0 as they play in the sixth. Tyler McGill has thrown six shutout innings so far for the Mets. Steven Matz just departed 5 2/3 innings and 96 pitches. Honestly, Matz pitched pretty well. First two batters of the game, a walk, an Alonzo homer, and that was it. That's all the Mets have gotten so far, but the Mets lead 2-0.
Enough to submarine your first five bet.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, that game off the board at the moment for the New York Yankees now. By the way, they are minus 165 after Stanton draws a walk with two outs there in the top of the fifth.
Yeah, and the Yankees, again, we've talked about it a lot here. Need to rack up as many wins as they possibly can, especially against a Red Sox team that they're chasing. If the results hold right now in Boston and Cleveland, the Rays and the Red Sox would be tied in the American League East heading into the weekend, Adam Candy.
Well, I mean, you talked when we broke the news with the trade of Nelson Cruz from Minnesota to Tampa about the fact that Tampa could be a sneaky little division value. You took, I believe, plus 160, if I'm not mistaken.
I did, yes.
So now we talk about today, though, a move by Tampa that is a little harder to understand, trading away one of their only reliable starting pitchers in Rich Hill, who, again, has taken a little bit of a dive since the sticky stuff crackdown, but there still is not much starting pitching to speak of in Tampa with Tyler Glass now still out.
By the way, a quick stat on the Met game real quick. Tyler McGill, who threw six shutout innings tonight, the lowest ERAs through six starts in Mets history, Adam. Terry Leach at 1.73. Nolan Ryan, that guy was pretty good, 1.98. Dylan G at 2.09. And now Tyler McGill in at fourth place at 2.1, Adam Candy. So if he goes out and gets an out in the seventh inning without giving up an earned run, he'll actually hop Dylan G and be in third by himself.
Well, I mean, look, anytime you can be on a list with Dylan G and Nolan Ryan, clearly you have made it to the top of the Mets food chain.
Dylan G. I remember that stretch, too, where Dylan G. Came up and was unbelievably good at the beginning of the run. I don't think Dylan G.'s in Major League Baseball anymore. I think his career ended a few years ago.
Honestly, preferred Ollie G.
Yeah, I can't really blame you there, Adam. A little more comedic than Dylan, even though I don't know how funny Dylan G. is as a human being, Adam. Not too sure there. In Philadelphia, the Phillies leading the Braves 3-1. Zach Wheeler has escaped in and out of trouble, but has done enough to hold the lead. The big blow now on JT Realmuto, a home run for Philadelphia. Phillies in the live market, minus 500. It is primetime action here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Jeff Parles. He is Adam Candy. And I thought that was a home run for the New York Yankees, but the Nesson camera angle messing with my depth perception there. Just a long flyout by Rougned Odor to end the top of the fifth. The Yankees still leading 1-0. As now you're sweating your first five Yankee tickets if you had them tonight.
Certainly are. Remember, as we mentioned earlier, the Yankees a slight dog in this game with Gerrit Cole. Jeff, I believe you said it was back to the Pittsburgh Pirates days, 2017. Mm-hmm. But since Gerrit Cole has been an underdog?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Impressive as we see the kind of run that Gerrit Cole has been on for both the Astros and for the New York Yankees. Minus 115 pregame on the Red Sox. Yankees plus 105. That game currently off the board at the moment, unless you have something I'm not seeing there on the Yankees.
OTB on my... My screen is stuck in the fourth inning, so my screen is
-150 at DraftKings.
There you go, -150. That's why Ben Wilson's here, of course. Let's go back to football, though. Let's go back to football, Adam Candy. We talked about the Giants on their own. Let's go to the entire NFC East here, and we already had the Giants discussion a little bit. So let's finish that off before moving in to the division favorites with the Cowboys and the Washington Football Team. But the New York Giants. +450 to win the NFC East, win total of 7, making the playoffs. Yes is +225. You're laying $3 on the no. Adam, this is a stay-off team for me just because of the no trustworthy factors of Daniel Jones and an offensive line that you have bashed through the last few years and bashed earlier in this show, and properly so.
Hey, if you don't believe me, trust the Pro Football Focus guys. Steve Palazzolo ranked them as the worst offensive line in all of football coming into the season. And so, Jeff, +450 on the division, that's about right. 7 on the wins, that's about right. I'm not touching anything when it comes to this New York team.
No plays. No plays at all. And that will be one of them, too, where you'll be able, for like your adjusted in-season prices on yes, no, make the playoffs, win total, that would be the market I'd look to get into. You have to see how Jones at least starts this season before really getting in on the New York Giants. Let's go to the Dallas Cowboys now, America's team. Dak Prescott is back. The Cowboys are the division favorite yet again. Not much of a shock there at +135. The win total is a 9. The yes, no to make the playoffs. -140 on the yes. The no at +110. Adam, what are your thoughts here on the Cowboys? Because the defense, I don't know how much worse it can get from what it was a year ago. It's not your usual great offensive line, but you at least get Prescott back into the mix here where the Cowboy offense was mediocre with Ben DiNucci at times, Andy Dalton at times, and I feel like I'm forgetting another quarterback who played last year for the Dallas Cowboys.
If you are, then so have Cowboys fans.
Okay.
So you can leave it right there with Dak Prescott back on the field. I do not agree with the Cowboys being the favorite to win this division, and it goes back to that defense, Jeff. You mentioned it, 23rd by DVOA last year, and they were a prime reason that even without Dak Prescott that this team could not accomplish much of anything. I do think this offense is elite. I think with Dak Prescott and the weapons that they have, it is a top 10 offense in football. They're going to put up a lot of points, and they're going to have to put up a lot of points because I think this defense is going to be problematic for them at all three levels. I mean, there really is nothing that I look at with them unless they are going to get some significant returns from injury to make this a team that can win the division. I do not believe the Cowboys are the NFC East favorite. However, this division is so weak that win total of 9 might be just about right. It might even feel comfortable talking about an over.
9 is an over number for me because if you look at the Dallas Cowboys schedule through this season, and I will say this, Adam, you look at the early portions, they obviously get a horrific draw out of the gate. They get to go to the defending Super Bowl champs week 1 on Thursday night. There's your opener across the league. And then week 2 is a pretty difficult draw. You have to, again, it is a longer week because it was a Thursday to a Sunday, but you have to go on the road going from one end of the country to the other within 10 days there, and you play the Chargers, who, again, first home game with fans at SoFi for the L.A. Chargers, Adam, that game. And it's a scenario where the Cowboys could very easily start 0-2. Now, after that, they get three straight home games against teams that neither of us expect to be any good, with Philadelphia, Carolina, and the Giants. So they'll be able to make up ground there. But nine, if you can get a nine, because there's 9.5s out there as well, nine is a pretty fair number to bet over. Because unless if Dak gets hurt again, I have a hard time seeing Dallas going under 500, unless if that coaching staff, which is questionable with Mike McCarthy as head coach, really does some things to really push them backwards, which I don't foresee with Dak back and healthy. I think nine is a pretty good number to bet over just because of the push potential in a worst-case scenario.
Yeah, the Cowboys really benefit from getting that weaker third-place schedule from the division. And you look here and you see that after they take on, let's say, the Chiefs in Week 11, there's not another game on that schedule that you say, wow, I'm not so sure about that one, right? I'm not a believer in the Saints this year. I easily think this team could be 9-8, 10-7, and yet because of what I think of another team in this division, I don't think 10-7 is going to be enough.
Well, they have two games against Washington late in the season, weeks 14 and 16. Dallas plays Washington twice, and also to a backloaded divisional slate, which is a common thread in the NFC East this year. Four of the last five for Dallas come within the NFC East. And if you want to go back in a time machine, you could say all of them, because of course the Cardinals were in the NFC East before the 32-team realignment in the league. Let's go to Washington here, the Washington football team. Ryan Fitzpatrick now the projected starting quarterback. Taylor Heinicke now the backup after Yeoman's work in the playoffs against Tampa Bay. Alex Smith retiring year two under Ron Rivera. They go out, they make some nice moves, including Curtis Samuel in free agency, drafting Davis out of Kentucky to help out an already stout defense. And you look at the Washington football team's schedule here, Adam. They do get an unfortunate break of getting Buffalo in that 17th cross game, which, again, pretty much any other team in the AFC East, if Washington got them, I would say they'll be able to go on the road and win that game this year. Buffalo, probably not. But the rest of that schedule, and this is a common thread in the NFC East, and especially if the Aaron Rodgers retirement buzz ends up being true, they don't get hurt by that cross game like they would have if Rodgers was in there. This schedule is very manageable, except for, again, they get their tough opponents at home. Kansas City at home, Tampa Bay at home, Seattle at home. They got a really nice draw for a first-place team.
So let's talk about the idea of repeatability of defense, right? That is the one thing that we have said. It's difficult to do it year in, year out. This Washington defense was absolutely outstanding in the front seven last year. So am I projecting this team to win the NFC East because I believe that the defense is repeatable? No. I think that they'll probably be a step down from what they were last year, which still puts them in the upper half of the league. I am a believer in what they did offensively. Look, Ryan Fitzpatrick is not an elite NFL quarterback, but when you're going from Dwayne Haskins and Taylor Heinicke and Alex Smith
and Kyle Allen,
when you're going from them to a competent gunslinger in Ryan Fitzpatrick, and then you add Samuel, and now you have a full season of Terry McLaurin with a competent quarterback, I think 8 is a very low total, even with the juice at minus 40 at DraftKings on the wins for Washington. I think this team is probably the rightful favorite in the NFC East. You mentioned the fact that the schedule does not set up as well with them getting the Bills, but if this team gets to the back half of the schedule with a reasonable record, if they get to the back half at 6-4, you know, then all these division games that they have left, I easily think this team, with the right breaks, could win 11 games this year.
Well, look, just look at the final third of the season. A road game here in Vegas against the Raiders, that's a great matchup for Washington, what that front seven can do to Vegas' offensive line. And then look, they're going to create their own destiny here. The last 5 weeks are against the division, which is pretty wild that the first 13 weeks of the year they play one division game. But you get Dallas, you go Dallas, Philly, and then the Giants. And we'll get to the Eagles in a second. Three of those games, it doesn't matter, the two of them are on the road. Washington probably going to be favored in three of those five, and maybe even against Dallas at home week 14, depending on what the Cowboys are going into that game.
Jeff, you mentioned this in terms of some of the teams we were talking about last night. Look at the schedule and non-division games against the toughest teams that they're going to face. They get four out of the five of them at home.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing you could ask for Ron Rivera's team, because they'll get the Chargers, as you mentioned, week one at home. Then they get the Chiefs on the home field. They get Tampa Bay. And by the way, look back to that Tampa Bay Super Bowl run. Who gave Tampa Bay the best game of any team they faced playoffs?
Washington gave them as good of a game as anyone.
Look, I'm not going to tell you that they should have won the game, but Taylor Heinicke had a drive to win the game against Tampa. We all knew how that was going to turn out. But again, the schedule, as well as it could go for Washington getting a first-place schedule here, this team, I think, sets up very well for this year.
I'm with him. I like them to win this division. The only concern is, do we finally get a bad Fitzpatrick year? It's been a while since we've gotten one of those, Adam.
It's possible. I still think this offensive line is an upper half offensive line in the league when they get back to health here. Now, let's get to the bottom of the division, Jeff, and let's look at this Philadelphia Eagles team, who I think we're pretty well in alignment on this being the worst team in the division, right? I think Jalen Hurts will be fun. I think that'll give them some offensive games that are more entertaining than what you're used to watching with the Eagles, but this defense is horrendous. I just don't see where the Philadelphia Eagles get anywhere near 6.5 wins.
A bad defense, an offense with a quarterback that I don't buy into with Jalen Hurts, a head coach that looks like could be a one-and-done train wreck. Again, you can't judge anything off of press conferences, but a guy who the qualifications for Nick Sirianni, probably not there to be an NFL head coach at this point in his career. And all of his press conferences might as well be out of as a coach against the team you don't really like in any sports movie ever made. But look, this is a bad football team. They don't have enough weapons on offense. Their defense is a disaster. And their schedule, too. Like, look, their schedule, and this is the common denominator with all these NFC East teams, their schedules really aren't that difficult. If the Eagles had any semblance of being a competent team here, you could say, all right, you take the last place schedule, you get a road game at Detroit, a game you can win, you get the Jets in your cross game, which is, again, an easy travel game for Philadelphia. Hop on either the Amtrak or hop on the bus and go up the turnpike to the Meadowlands from Philadelphia. They're even with the good cross games, Adam, they do not have enough talent to win more than probably five games this year. And I like that 6.5. If you're going to give me a juiced under, I'll very happily take that with the Eagles. And if Jalen Hurts beats me, tip your cap, move to the next bet.
I think this is a 1-5 team in the division. I think they'll probably split with the Giants. I think they lose all of their games to Dallas and to Washington.
Depends if Dallas needs week 18.
Fair enough. Dallas might not be in that position. But Philadelphia gets a rough draw with that Niners game, because that's a Niners team that finishes lower in the NFC West than they should have and now comes back loaded this year, with the obvious Jimmy Garoppolo exception thrown in there for as long as he's the starting quarterback. But this is a rebuild year in Philadelphia. And like, we talk about a lot of quantifiable things, right, Jeff? We talk about stats. But if you have not read the expose piece that was done on Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie, the ownership, and seen the dysfunction that's going on inside that Philadelphia front office, that is enough to tell me don't trust the decision-making process for this team as they put it together. And I like the juice being plus on 6.5 under.
I'm kind of surprised that the juice is on the under there.
You think there's more belief in Jalen Hurts out there than we have?
I guess so. Or, again, when you're looking at the rest of these teams in the division, Giants are only at a 7. People could see, I could at least see an argument for someone saying Washington is a regress candidate. But the problem is, when you go 7-9, there's not much to really regress to. I think that's a forgotten factor with Washington for some that may think they may regress. It's like they weren't even good last year. They're probably going to regress progress this year and become an actual good team, even though they won a division a year ago at 7-9.
And that's kind of what I was getting at talking about the offense, right? Yeah. This offense was horrible last year for Washington. Absolutely abysmal. And so all they have to do is take reasonable steps forward on offense, and even if this defense is not what it was last year with this front seven dominating, and I still think they could be very good, even if they're not that, the steps on offense will keep Washington up there in top of the NFC East. And speaking of top of the East, I believe that was Rafael Devers.
Just go off a call. That's a horrendous beat if you had the Yankees in the first five.
Yep, two out, two-run home run. Yankees had a 1-0 lead going into the bottom of the fifth, and now Gerrit Cole, his fourth home run allowed in the last two starts at Fenway Park, and the Yankees trail 3-1.
And that, this could be the lights-out series for the New York Yankees now for this entire season. If you go up to Fenway and lose 3 out of 4 or get swept, it lights out. It's over.
And very honestly, me as a Yankees fan looking at the core of this team, I kind of hope it is, because this team would be better served by looking to sell at the deadline than to add.
Imagine that. New York Yankees selling. But if they get swept out this weekend, they should sell with the trade deadline 1 week from today. Adam Candy, we'll just be getting on next Friday right as the deadline has passed. When we get back, we'll update you on the other games going on across the Major League Baseball slate as we continue on here on Primetime Action on VSiN. Time to put on your lucky Crocs and channel your inner fortune teller, because your prediction might just make you $10,000 richer. The Crocs Hoops Draft Prediction Challenge is coming, and dare we say it's free to play on DraftKings.com. If the odds are in your favor, 10 G's could come your way. Learn more at DraftKings.com/Crocs. It is Primetime Action here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Parlson for Gil Alexander, Adam Candy in for Matt Brown, Ben Wilson in for Kelly Bidlin. Let's go to our guy Ben Wilson here, because during the break, you mentioned a player that I had forgotten had gotten traded to the Milwaukee Brewers, doing something for the Brew Crew against Lucas Giolito.
That's correct. Rowdy Tellez, they're trying to make him into the new Daniel Vogelback, guy hitting 120 that comes to Milwaukee and starts hitting. RBI single, Brewers up 1-0, but what's bizarre, I just noticed, is Freddy Peralta out of the game, trying to figure out what happened, because he was at 51 pitches, looked awesome. 4 shutout innings, so they go to Adrian Houser, who is basically been the fifth starter most of the year. So Houser is in. It's 1-0 Milwaukee. He just gave up a base hit. So this is very interesting, because Milwaukee on the live line is -245. White Sox +185, considering this was near a pick'em to close, slight favorites to Milwaukee. So one of those, I doubt the algorithm has figured this out here, that Peralta's out of the game. Live total is 5.5, so that is really interesting. I'm still, again, I'll try to see what happened there with Peralta, but that's kind of the marquee game we're tracking right now. The other big update, the AL wildcard race between the Rays and Indians, sees Jose Ramirez hit an RBI triple to tie the game at 4. In the eighth inning, Rays -120 live, Indians -110, live total 10.5. So an adventure of a day for Ramirez, who made 2 errors on the same play in a Little League home run to Randy Rosarena, but has now since hit a 3-run homer and an RBI triple. So he has bounced back in a big way. Those are our main updates for now. Jeff, still just bizarre. Well, I'll try to figure out what's happened there with Peralta, but is that one of those you would look to get in on here?
Maybe. I'm going to wait till the end of the half inning here and then see if I can get over $2 on the White Sox. I'm seeing +190 right now with 1 out in the top of the fifth. Also in Boston, Gary Sanchez out of the game. Rob Brantley pitch hitting for him in the sixth inning. No one seems to know exactly what happened to Sanchez in the last half inning.
Strange, of course, to have Gary Sanchez catching Gerrit Cole, but Kyle Higashioka is on the COVID-19 list for the New York Yankees. So could this be a situation where they're just trying to save Sanchez for the rest of the series, not wanting to really have to play Brantley? I don't know, but we are waiting for more information.
By the way, just an update on Peralta from Will Salmon of The Athletic, who covers the Brewers. Freddie Peralta out after the four innings, 51 pitches. It was a short start by design from the Brewers staff to manage his innings. So there you go, Ben Wilson. No injury for Freddie Peralta, just managing the innings for a guy who, again, has not pitched this deep into a season before.
Saw the phrase tandem day. Planned tandem day. That sounds fun. Sounds like something you do after your NBA team in the city wins a world championship. Have a little tandem day.
It's the sort of thing we do every night here on Primetime Action. Jeff Parles and I are doing tandem night here on a Friday. But it must be nice, Ben, to be in a situation where the Brewers have such a comfortable pad in that NL Central that they can afford to pull Freddie Peralta after four innings and start to think about what they might need him later in the year, maybe in the playoffs.
In fairness, I think a lot of this, too, a lot of their starters went way over their innings limits from seasons past. And we saw it happen last time they were in the playoffs. And just a lot of their guys were completely gassed. So, I get it. It's just jarring when you see a guy that effective, 51 pitches, and you still pull him. Just
and also, too, again, I know it's an interleague game, but it's a first-place team that's in playing the Brewers. A good measuring stick for what Milwaukee is playing the White Sox, but it looks like Hauser's going to get through the top of the fifth inning unscathed, 1-0 Milwaukee, and that totals all the way down to 4.5 now live, Adam.
That is a low total. Some quick updates, by the way. If you're looking at the Dodgers later on tonight, Max Muncy officially placed on the paternity list. So Max Muncy will be out of the lineup for the Dodgers. They recall Brusdar Graterol. And for those who are joining us late, the Aaron Rodgers news, of course, multiple sports books have pulled their markets on Aaron Rodgers and on the NFC North on some rumors, at least, of a retirement coming next week.
I am at a loss for words at how this has all played out for Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. Off, again, arguably his best season ever, and going to retire because of the relationships falling apart there in Green Bay. When we get back, we'll look at the late slate in Major League Baseball. A few 10 o'clock Eastern games we have not gotten to. We'll discuss those next here on Primetime Action on VSiN. VSiN football betting guides are coming soon, and there is no better way to prepare for college and pro seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Each guide is only $20, and discounts are available when you buy both. Now is the time to reserve your copy or sign up for VSiN All Access and get everything we offer for the entire football season. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. I'm Jeff Parles. He's Adam Candy. Ben Wilson here as well. It is Primetime Action. We're actually going to talk about the NFL here. I do not have any plays on the late baseball games. Adam does not have any plays on the late baseball games. Adam Burke, like the Oakland A's. That's the biggest thing you need to know on the late baseball games tonight.
He was pointing to Yusei Kikuchi struggling over the last two starts, 12 runs in those starts.
That's all you need to know. And Pete Alonso just hit his second homer of the night. So the Mets are up 3-0 into the second deck. So there you go. It's a good thing I didn't double down on me being a cynic there for sure. But the big news of the day, it's not Michael Thomas having to get surgery on his ankle and likely missing at least the first 4 weeks of the season. It just came about an hour ago, a report from SI and of course easily verifiable. You check your phones and see that a bunch of sports books pulled all the Green Bay Packer and NFC North odds off the board because of the expectation now that Aaron Rodgers is going to retire at some point in the near future and as early as next week for the Green Bay Packers. And Adam, we discussed it a little bit earlier. What this does to the NFC North, we'll start there. What this does to the NFC North, you were making a case for the Chicago Bears before. This makes this division completely unbettable for me because I think Minnesota would be the best team in the division, but the numbers are going to get too short if assuming Rodgers does retire. And the Bears, if they were starting Justin Fields from the get-go, I think I'd look that way. But because we're probably going to waste 5 weeks of it with Andy Dalton in there, it makes it harder to play when you're playing your best quarterback for only 12 of the 17 games.
I can trust the Vikings to a degree, Jeff, because I do think Kirk Cousins is consistently underrated. They have the two best wide receiver, the best wide receiver duo, maybe outside of Tampa Bay with Jefferson and Thielen. And I just don't trust the defense. I really don't. I mean, you can talk about Dalvin Cook all you want. I don't trust this Minnesota defense, even with Danielle Hunter back into the mix at some point here. I don't trust Minnesota defensively. I really do think Chicago is my favorite in this division. Now, let's talk about something else, though. Eventually, these markets are going to come back up on the Packers, right? We're going to see win totals pop back up on the Packers if they don't have Aaron Rodgers. And what we really haven't talked about is, what are the Packers if Jordan Love starts? What is the scene?
So I'm going to flip this on you. What would you make their win total if it's Jordan Love? Because I've thought about this, but again, my whole brain was, Aaron Rodgers isn't going to retire. He's not going to walk away. He's still going to be a Packer, but it's looking more and more like that it's going to be the case, and Jordan Love is going to be that quarterback for Green Bay.
All right, I'll take it on, and I think you have to factor in today's news about Davante Adams as well, and some very smart people who follow contract situations in the NFL on Twitter pointed out that there are no more holdouts because of the CBA and the penalties for holdouts, but there are essentially hold-ins. Oh, I have back spasms. Oh, I can't come back from that lingering injury for another week or two, right? Davante Adams might not play this season at full speed if he does not have the contract extension that he wants, and it looks like with the news today he's not going to get that. And so if you take both Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams out of this mix, then I am bearish on the Packers. Then that, realistically, I think that number goes somewhere around, what, eight maybe on Green Bay?
So I'm looking at it right now. Because I did my preseason picks all the way through as Aaron Rodgers would be there, and I had Green Bay at 12-5. Just eyeballing it on wins that I have them having that I don't think they would if Rodgers isn't there. Week one against New Orleans, I know Michael Thomas isn't there, but that is a difficult place to play, and it's a brutal first draw for Jordan Love in an NFL debut to have to go to the Super Bowl or the Superdome. I don't care that the Saints may not be as good as they've been in the past few years, but that's a brutal draw. You look, heck, even week two against a Lion team that isn't any good isn't a gimme anymore if Jordan Love is the quarterback, Adam. At home on a primetime spot for your first home game? That's not a gimme, even though Rodgers in his first career start won on a Monday night back in 2008.
No, I mean, look, you can go all the way down this schedule and say to yourself, look, what is it that Green Bay still has that's going to get the job done by the time they have to play the Browns, by the time they have to play the Ravens, the Rams, the Seahawks, the Chiefs? I mean, this could get ugly in a hurry for Green Bay. I think a reasonable win total for them would be eight if they don't have Adams and Rodgers in the mix. And I think that probably has you finishing third in this division.
Look at it, too. I mean, we think back to, you mentioned that, Jeff, when Rodgers' his first full season as a starter. So Packers are coming off an NFC championship game. So presumably the core they had was pretty comparable to what you could say now. Team coming off an NFC championship game here. And like that was a year where with Rodgers, who we had already seen in the past, he had that great game in Dallas when Favre got hurt on the Thursday night game the previous year. He at least had some reps.
Right.
They go 6-10 that year with a Rodgers guy who I think we all would probably, you have to say, like at that point in his career was certainly more advanced than Jordan Love just by nature of raw snaps. So I don't know that the reaction would be enough here because like 6-10 that year where the Packers at least had like a decent core still back from that 07 NFC championship game team. You think about the 6-10 record there, you think about here, I mean, six, it would be 6-11, 7-10. Like, is that really, that seems realistic to me, but then you're also taking out one of the biggest pieces that potentially that they would have been bringing back from that core. So I, as somebody who has watched like all but eight Green Bay Packer games in my lifetime have been quarterbacked by one of the two, Favre or Rodgers, the just immense drop off that there has been for the other guys, and how like teams have just looked in the Brett Hundley, Scott Tolzien era, they have looked so clueless just with a lack of leadership in those games. And I think I do think that, because this was going to happen regardless, it was always going to take some time for them to get used to life without Rodgers here. I actually think it would be even worse than this. I would make the number more like six here, guys.
I think you have to think about this defense as well. The fact that you still have Jair Alexander, you still have the Smith brothers. I think that's probably, go ahead.
And more importantly, you don't have Mike Pettine anymore.
More importantly, you don't have Mike Pettine. Yeah. I think the defense and the fact that you have two games against the Lions is probably going to be enough to keep this team above that six number,
keep
Ben.
In mind,
but I understand where you're coming from in terms of the drop off in quarterback play.
2008, just remember, Detroit Lions were 0-16 that year. So, I mean, but I totally get what you're saying.
When we get back, you know, we're going to continue the discussion here. It's the biggest news of the night. We're going to continue the discussion on what the Packers would look like and what the NFC as a whole would look like if Rodgers does step away. That's next on Primetime Action. Sign up for the DraftKings Sportsbook now and get a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Simply download the app, sign up now using the promo code VSIN, and get started with the only top-rated sportsbook that matters. DraftKings, you can bet on it. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. It is Primetime Action here on VSIN. I'm Jeff Parles. He's Adam Candy. Ben Wilson is here as well, discussing the news that it looks like Aaron Rodgers may be retiring next week. Multiple sports books across the country, here in Vegas, newer jurisdictions, pulling Green Bay win totals, NFC North win totals, and NFC North odds off the board. I want to look at one of the other markets here real quick. Adam, I want to look at the MVP market real quick, because normally when you go into a market and a player just flat out gets removed, the numbers have to go elsewhere here. So who gets moved with Aaron if Aaron Rodgers does step away from the Packers? Is it just those guys that are above 20-1, or are you going to see movement down the board here?
Oh, I think it's Patrick Mahomes.
So you go Mahomes shorter, yeah, like plus 300.
I think Mahomes probably moves into that 250-300 range, because Aaron Rodgers, as last year's reigning MVP, is the guy who is the biggest threat on that board. And look down at Allen, Wilson, Prescott, Stafford, Brady even. Can you really draw a line and draw clear tiers among those guys? You're not as big on Josh Allen as some. You're not in on Dak Prescott because of where the Cowboys will be. I personally am not in on Matt Stafford at all this year. So, you know, what is it that would separate the rest of that pack? I think where you look is you look to Mahomes and you say, well, Mahomes becomes even more obvious without having another quarterback in his tier, because Deshaun Watson probably isn't playing this year.
Right. You would imagine that two of the guys on your screen wouldn't be there, Rodgers and Watson. I agree with you. It would be Mahomes, and I would imagine – what I would imagine is that Tom Brady's number also dips as well. Those would be the two guys that I would imagine you'd see the move on, where the numbers where Rodgers disappears from the board and you have to see movement somewhere.
Well, if we like the idea, Jeff, of narratives driving these things, mm-hmm. We're kind of entering this weird phase of Tom Brady's career where it's likable Tom Brady, right? Look at what we've seen over social the last few months, right? Drunk Tom Brady coming off the boat today. Tom Brady showing off all his rings. It's almost like we're kind of turning around and having a LeBron post-Miami with Tom Brady where he's not in New England anymore, so we don't feel morally obligated to dislike him and Belichick. Like, the narrative could just form right behind Brady, and we know how good that offense is going to be again.
Yeah, and look, the other thing is, too, Tampa, let's just call it how it is. Tampa didn't care in the regular season last year. They didn't care one bit. Now, might they? Is it possible that they don't care again, knowing, all right, we just have to be in the dance. We can win the division with 10-7 this year pretty easily. We did it without any home games until the Super Bowl last year.
I thought, by the way, when you said that we could win the division going 10-7, I thought you were going to say that in the NFC South you could win with 10 players on the field.
Well,
because at any time, I think you probably could, if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you could play with a red card for Tampa and still come out and probably win at least 3 or 4 games in that division.
Why not? But look, they're just so much better than everyone in that division. And look, if Tampa – look, it's not impossible Tampa goes 15-2. And
that's best case scenario, but yeah.
Not impossible. I'm not saying it happens. I think they're more like a 12 or 13 win team, but it's not impossible to go 15-2 and Brady ends up being the MVP. And you may want to hop in on that right now while you can before that number moves down more than likely at some point next week, Adam.
So that deals with the MVP side of things. We've talked a little bit about the Packers. We started to talk about the Bears. Let's dive in a little bit on this Vikings team because
sure,
we haven't really spent a lot of time talking about how is Minnesota affected by an Aaron Rodgers retirement. And to be clear, there is some talk out there that is a Carson Palmer retirement to try to force a trade. We don't know if that will ultimately be the case, but the effect is the same. He's not in the NFC North anymore. So if we're talking about this Minnesota team, I mentioned the offensive side. The defense, I don't think, is all that good. But, Jeff, when you look at the early part of this schedule for the Vikings, soft, soft, and softer for Minnesota into the bye with the exception of having to face the Browns.
Well, Seattle... Seattle's not a gimme. At Arizona's not a gimme.
Bengals, Lions, Panthers.
I do agree with you that there are some soft games on there. But would it stun you if Joe Burrow is fully healthy week one and Cincinnati wins that game? Wouldn't shock me.
It wouldn't shock
one
me,
bit.
But
and the one thing I will say, look, that offense is really good. And Kirk Cousins is what he is at this point. He is a bottom half of the top tier of the NFL quarterbacks, so top 16 quarterbacks in the league. He's clearly in that, somewhere in that range from 8 to 13, depending on how he's performing. You have a top 3 running back, and you have arguably the best wide receiving tandem in the NFL in Jefferson and Thielen. But that defense that you mentioned earlier, that defense is not good, and it is completely reversed of what this team was in the early portion of the Mike Zimmer era, where they only could play defense and their offense was what held them back. Now this defense, and again, that's why even with that first 6-week stretch where they're going to be a road favorite in Cincinnati, that's going to probably be Arizona 2 in week 2. They're going to be favored at home against Seattle. Cleveland will be a dog at home. And in the last 2 games, road favorite at Carolina and a big favorite at home against a bad Lions team. It wouldn't shock me, even with that soft start, they go 2-4 because that defense is just so bad. I mean, again, you can't take too much from last year, but that defense early in the season, I mean, they were horrible, and that's why they got off to such a brutal start. And in the end, that brutal start is what kept them out of the playoffs, Adam.
That's the low-end case, I think, of 2-4 for the Vikings,
that's the
right?
worst-case scenario.
Yeah, that's the worst-case scenario. I think 3-3 is realistic. I think 4-2 is easily possible. Again, if you're going to look at the Cardinals and say that they'll be dogs in that game, yeah, they'll be dogs in that game, but Cardinals and Vikings are mirror images of each other. Those offenses might not be the same offenses the way they run, but the level of offense and the level of defense, those two teams are teams that are hoping that defense not being repeatable means they're going to get some positive movement back this year. And again, you can't undersell the fact that Danielle Hunter coming back does add something to this Minnesota defense, but at the same time, they were horrendous last season. I said earlier, I don't think they're the favorite in this division. Looking at a win total of 9, that is juiced to the under, Jeff. Where are you feeling on that?
With the Rodgers news now, it's a complete stay away. because those would be two games that Minnesota would lose to me if Rodgers was there. That probably turned into two wins. Now I understand going to Lambeau week 17 in January for a team that, even though technically Minneapolis is every bit as cold as Green Bay, you're playing inside of the U.S. Bank Stadium. So you're not used to being in the frigid conditions that you're going to get in the first week of January in Green Bay. But it's a stay off with the Rodgers news. 9-8, Adam, makes sense to me. Them landing on 9 and that being enough to win a division as well.
Well, I'll just point out, not that I need to remind our Packers fan behind the glass here, but you know, last year Dalvin Cook walked in and ran all over the Packers in Green Bay. So it's it's not out of the question that the matchups can dictate some of this regardless.
Well, remember, that game in Lambeau last year was one of the weirdest games of the entire NFL season, where it was all but one possession in the game. There was a score.
And four possession first half.
Four possession first half. It was one of the most efficient offensive games you're ever going to see. And it were long scoring touchdown drives, which, by the way, that was one of the ones where you're thankful that the team that I had the over in that game, you're thankful a team goes for two down by eight and Green Bay went for two down eight in that game to get that game over the total. But you bring up a good point with that. And the one thing is, even though you have those elite receivers, Minnesota does have the offense, again, to play both ways with the elite player in Dalvin Cook as well. Again, that defense, though, is where my hesitation still lands.
Completely. And just to spend a moment on the team at the bottom of the division with the Detroit Lions, look, it's a start over. We know it's a start over. Jared Goff is not necessarily the guy I want in a start over. However, do you believe in Dan Campbell getting more out of this team than what we've seen in years past? Because it would be hard to get less out of them than Matt Patricia did.
You're not wrong there. Look, my take with the Lions, first off, their skill position players are just brutal. Absolutely brutal. Goff goes from a scenario where he had arguably the best offensive mind in the NFL coaching him and great weapons to just a disaster with weapons, and also to Anthony Lynn's offensive coordinator.
He doesn't have to deal with the clock, though.
Thankfully he doesn't for Detroit's sake. But look, Adam, the one problem that the Lions have, and we talked about it earlier, other than those two games against Cincinnati and the Eagles, where are they winning here? Their schedule, even though it's not overly brutal, they're not winning a bunch of these road games against the AFC teams that they could beat. They're not winning in Pittsburgh, even with how poor I think Pittsburgh's going to be. They're not winning at Mile High against Denver either. And it's just a struggle to find wins. Now, the one thing that could happen here is that Jared Goff, remember, Jared Goff was the quarterback of a team that was in the Super Bowl 3 years ago and outplayed Drew Brees in an NFC Championship game. That is something that happened not that long ago. If he can at least recapture some of that form, maybe the Lions are plucky and get the 5 or 6 wins, but I think it's still an under. It's scheduled just too difficult for them.
I mean, look, 17 games, they're going to be favored in 2 of them as of right now. Yep. At home against the Eagles, at home against the Bengals, and that's about it.
That is it. Yep. The only time they're going to be favored this year. And heck, maybe week 18 against Green Bay if Aaron Rodgers.
Considering Aaron Rodgers might not be there?
Yeah. That's all the time we have here on Primetime Action. He's Adam Candy. I'm Jeff Parles. Ben Wilson, great job as always. We're back next week in for Gil, Matt, and Kelly. So we'll see you then here on Primetime Action on VSiN. The Nightcap with Brian Noe is next here on VSiN.